100 Folk Tunes from Hardanger by Yeah Tveit. Closing the show today, thanks so much for all your emails. I do hope you'll join me again for more great music next Sunday from 10.
Sunday Morning with Susie Klein is a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Mark Swartzentruber.
An evening of Bach from Tewkesbury Abbey in Gloucestershire. Radio 3 Live in Concert goes to the Cheltenham Festival as the Magdalena Consort explores Bach's musical fascination with numbers. Three cantatas, a motet, and the Brandenburg Concerto, which numerically meant most to him. Radio 3 Live in Concert, Wednesday night at 7:30.
Well, let's leave the numbers alone for a moment. It's midday on BBC Radio 3, and it's time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Alex Horn is an award-winning comedian, and he's one that uses music a lot. He has his own jazz group, the Horn Section. Well, what else? You may have seen him in BBC 4's We Need Answers, a comedy quiz, and then there was his documentary, The Games That Time Forgot, such as Cricket on Horseback, which I'd love to hear a little bit more about. Did you get very good at it?
It's the first game that's been played for 200 years, so we drew. So I'm up there in the world's best cricket on horseback players.
Did you end up playing on a polo ground?
No, we played on an outdoor man-made surface, five-a-side cricket on horseback, which meant that I did actually manage to hit a six. I hit one out of the ground, and I'm the only person this millennium to hit a six off a horse.
And you're currently also, or maybe you've done it now, you were aspiring to be the oldest man in the Guinness Book of Records?
Yeah, I've not yet achieved that record. I'm still only 32, so I've got potentially a century to go, but I'm on track. I'm fit and healthy. So yeah, I'm still very much attempting to not die.
And you have to keep them informed of your progress.
Well, ideally, what the Guinness Book of Records want is for one of their officials to be with you during the world record attempt, which means someone's got to be with me at all times for the next 100 years.
Your wife would be good. I mean,
yeah, she'd be ideal. And she is just younger than me, which helps, because I don't want the person with me to beat me to the record. So, yeah, I probably will employ her in the end.
I think that your love of music probably came from your father.
You're quite right. Yeah. My dad's a bird watcher, and that's the simplest way of describing him. And I think his relationship to birds is similar to his relationship with music. And also, because he was so obsessed with birdwatching when I was growing up, I was very anti it. And I was probably the same with classical music. The more he tried to thrust classical music on me, the more I listened to other things. But gradually, now I've become a father, I can see what he was on about.
And have you become a twitcher too?
Ish. Twitcher, I mean, my shackles were raised slightly from that. Twitcher is a subspecies of a birdwatcher. It's a different group of people. Twitchers are extraordinary. They're the very extreme of bird watching. My dad's very much a birder. That's the term.
Sorry. Yeah. Mustn't get this wrong. Now, it's rather appropriate that you're going to begin with a piece that bears your name.
Yes. My whole life is dominated by my surname. That's what happens if you have a distinctive one. So yeah, the first piece of music is Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 4. And it's the one piece of classical music that goes around in my head before I go to sleep at night. I think of myself as a French horn player, because I did play French horn for 4 years, and I managed to get to grade 3 because I have no musical talent. But I do still think of myself as a French horn player, and this is the one piece of music that I yearned to play, to be
and
able
you,
to play.
You do sometimes play the horn in your show, don't you?
I do, yeah. I play the scale of C. Well, I try. I have trouble reaching the top C.
Is this just to inflict a little more pain on the audience?
Well, the show involves two people I grew up with. I grew up with musicians. My closest friends have turned out to be professional jazz players, and I've always been very envious of them, and I've wanted to be musical, but I just don't have it in me. So I'm still striving, you know, I'm still clinging on with this French horn.
But you have great fun with them as a group.
Oh, yeah, they're at my mercy, which is brilliant. I can control, I'm like a conductor.
So do you just speak, or do you play instruments on here?
personally, I just I sing. Yeah. I try to sing, and they normally tell me to try again in a different key. But yeah, I sing. Occasionally, they hand me a tambourine.
And can't you be seen once every fortnight at the Lyric?
We're at the Lyric, yeah, which is the home of Thriller, Michael Jackson Thriller. So we do Monday nights there, which is extraordinary. It's a wonderful old theatre, 900 seats on four tiers. So it's quite a thrill, really, to be on that stage with friends who can make these amazing noises. So, I mean, I feel very inadequate, really, in their company, but it's nice to have company.
This movement we're going to hear is a very famous one, isn't it? It has been used by all kinds of people for various effects.
Mm. Yeah, but I only think of the most jolly section of it. And there's much more to it than that. I think when I was re-listening to it for this, it struck me that it's almost a more grown-up sound than I remembered. And maybe it's because I listened to it a lot when, or was made to listen to it a lot when I was growing up. Yeah, there's sinister moments which aren't necessarily the remembered bits.
But the bits that are remembered are extraordinarily catchy.
Yeah, and extraordinarily hard to play. Especially, I think at the time, the French horn was probably even harder to play than it is now.
This is in E-flat major, so I imagine you play it in C major, do you?
Well, I actually got... my old horn was in F, and I got a new horn off eBay, and it took me about 4 months to realise it was in B-flat, and that's why none of my fingering would work properly. But all I can play is the theme tune to Dallas, so I'm still a couple of years off playing this.
I think we'd rather have the rondo from the horn concerto, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. Thank you. Yeah, I can't help but imagine the horn player breathing a huge sigh of relief afterwards, because that's what I would do, having got through it. But
I think, actually, I was thinking about this, Alex, just one. I think, and you should do this before you play your C major scale on the stage, but I think you should have a tape of this playing, and you should mime the first few bits.
That's not a bad idea.
I think people would think you're wonderful.
Yeah.
Then you could show them how really good you are by playing C major in your inimitable fashion.
Yeah, the truly hard scale. Yeah. I'm going to take that. Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome. The third movement, the Rondo from the Horn Concerto No. 4 in E-flat major, Kirkel 495 by Mozart, played not on this occasion by Alex Horn, but by Barry Tuckwell and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, directed by Neville Mariner. One of the pieces I think you heard very early on in childhood is a piece that always delights children, because, of course, it's got a story, which is illustrated by the music.
That's right. Peter and the Wolf, yeah, which was written for that very purpose, I think, to appeal to young children. I think young, I don't know how old, 5-6 year olds. And I think the idea was for the instruments to represent animals to appeal to children like me. And it worked. Although I think the idea of my parents playing it to me was that I would become interested in classical music, whereas I still listen to the same piece of music. I still like this piece of music. And I have children myself now, and we took our eldest. Oh, I took them both, I think. One barely registered. My son was born on Christmas Day, last one. And we took them to Peter and the Wolf, the local pantomime, so that they could hear this music. And it definitely does open up the imagination, I think.
This is a composer who has an extraordinary dramatic kind of flair. I mean, after all, Romeo and Juliet, his ballet score, is probably one of the greatest ballet scores ever written, I think. And then when he turned, and there's the classical symphony, of course, but then when he turned his attention to this piece, he managed to write something which had such an ability to communicate, but without being patronising.
Yes, definitely. I like that he's written Romeo and Juliet and Peter and the Wolf. I like imagining them in the same room. but you're right. I mean, I guess everyone who listens to it has favourite characters from it, and I don't really like Peter that much. To me, he sounds a bit too fey, whereas I side with the wolf, really. I think partly it might be the link with the French horn again, because he's represented by horns. I feel sorry for the duck, I think. The duck is, I think it's put me off the oboe. Whenever I hear the oboe now, I think of it as a duck and vice versa, and then it got eaten. So, you're right. It treats the children as proper listeners.
Well, I think we should listen to The Story Begins from Peter the Wolf and imagine somehow that we have got onto the wrong stage and that Romeo and Juliet are taking part in this.
Perfect.
Early one morning, Peter opened the gate and went out into the big green meadow. On a branch of a big tree sat a little bird, Peter's friend. "All is quiet," chirped the bird gaily. Just then, a duck came waddling round. She was glad that Peter had not closed the gate and decided to take a nice swim in the deep pond in the meadow. Seeing the duck, the little bird flew down onto the grass, settled next to her, and shrugged his shoulders. "What kind of a bird are you, if you can't fly?" he said. To which the duck replied, "What kind of a bird are you, if you can't swim?" and dived into the pond. Argued, the duck swimming in the pond, the little bird hopping along the shore. Suddenly, something caught Peter's eye. He noticed a cat crawling through the grass. The cat thought, "The bird is busy arguing. I'll just grab him." Stealthily, she crept towards him on her velvet paws. "Out!" shouted Peter, and the bird immediately flew up into the tree. While the duck quacked angrily at the cat. From the middle of the pond. The cat walked round the tree and thought, "Is it worth climbing up so high? By the time I get there, the bird will have flown away." Grandfather came out. He was angry because Peter had gone into the meadow.
"It is a dangerous place. If a wolf should come out of the forest, then what would you do?" Thank you.
Peter paid no attention to his grandfather's words. Boys like him are not afraid of wolves. But Grandfather took Peter by the hand, locked the gate, and led him home.
I have to tell you, Alex Horn, that I think, and you should be very proud of this, that in some 700 to 800 programmes and 15 years of Private Passions, I think that's the first time we've had a narrated Peter and the Wolf.
Is that really true? Wow.
Well, I think many people want to show off their maturity, and so they have Brendel playing Schubert and perhaps don't admit to these childhood likes.
I was aware, putting the list together, that I might sound quite childish because of it, but,
no, but
I'm not ashamed of that.
It's such a wonderful piece, actually, and it's so brilliantly put together. We heard Ben Kingsley as the narrator there with the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir Charles McCarris, and that was the opening of Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev.
Can I just say, my one problem with it is in the argument between the duck and the bird, ducks can fly. I don't... As my dad being a bird watcher, I don't know how he would feel about that. I've never asked him about that, but...
They do fly, and when they're disturbed, they always come back again, don't they, in circle?
Yeah, maybe that's their problem.
It's a mistake for somebody waiting to shoot them. Now, one of the things that you like to do when you're travelling is to collect music, isn't it? And it's funny how, rather like with wine, and even beer, actually, some seem right in their place of origin, and others travel.
Mm. I think you're giving me slightly too much credit, though. What I tend to do is buy music as presents for my brothers. This is my way of solving that difficult, what do you buy someone when you're abroad? So I always buy the music from that particular country. And yeah, you're right, sometimes the music sounds out of place back home. But this next piece doesn't. To me, it travels well. It's by a band called Editus, who I'm not sure how many people would be familiar with. Are you familiar with Editus?
Or I've heard the name, but yeah. I don't know the music.
No, well... on my honeymoon, or our honeymoon, we went to Costa.
It would be much nicer to be the two of you on a honeymoon.
Yeah, we didn't go separately. No. We went to Costa Rica, and it was, as it's meant to be, the best holiday of our lives, and a magical place, and it's a peaceful country, and they don't have an army, and we were completely wooed by Costa Rica. And one particular hotel we stayed in, there was furnished with CD players and music, in particular this music, and they're kind of... the biggest band in Costa Rica, and this particular song, yeah, it does bring me back to that holiday, but equally it doesn't sound out of place in the UK. It's sort of folky, but Latin American version of folk. It's sort of classical. I'm not very good at my genres, but it fits somewhere in between, and relaxing, spiky. There's a hint of animals in it. It's a very rich country in terms of its diversity of animals, and I sort of feel you can hear them in this piece of music. Thank you.
You feel those guys could have jammed very easily with the Buena Vista Social Club.
I'm sure
it's
they
could have.
That
kind of slight Latin feel.
Yeah.
Very good violin player too.
I'm glad you say that. It sounds good to me. I'm less attuned to these things, but it sounds impressive.
Editus, and that was a piece called Morning. The music that we were mentioning that appeals to children with the Prokofiev, there have been several pieces that have that effect. And I don't know if you remember Fantasia.
I do.
Where actually it's proved that almost anything, in fact, could work if it was allied to the right sort of image. I mean, the Rite of Spring, for a start. And there's another piece now, which I think you encountered in much the same spirit.
I did.
Alex Horton.
1984, big year for me. Just turned six, so I was at school, finding my feet, and this is the winter of 1984. There was a series on the BBC when there was, I guess, only three channels back then, so I think you have to imagine the family huddling around watching this thing. And I do remember watching this programme in front of the fire this winter. It was a programme called The Box of Delights, although I think my little brother always called it The Light of the Box, so we call it The Light of the Box. And this was the theme tune. And if I'm honest, I hadn't heard it probably since then, more than 25 years ago. And but it stayed with me. And, I mean, the programme itself was incredibly creepy, I think, thinking back. And I had a look on YouTube. You can see clips of it. And it's a remarkable programme, very serious for a kids' programme. And you're right, this music really hits the spot, even though it was composed, 50 years before by a man, a peculiar man, I think.
Victor Healy Hutchinson.
Yeah, he used to work for the BBC as director of music, but then
he
died because he didn't turn his radiators on, I think. Got pneumonia. And didn't travel by car, always travel by bike. Anyway, he sounds like my sort of man.
Bit of an eccentric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how sinister this piece of music is, despite it being about Christmas.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it, that you can take a piece of music. I mean, it's more like in a film, a horror film. If you see somebody walking up to a church on the top of a hill, the music tells you if they're going to go up to be murdered or to be married.
Yeah, this really sets the scene. I think I don't know if he is doing this consciously, but for me it sounds like a music box, which I always associated as a six-year-old with this box of delights.
Thank you.
Good carol. Good carol, that one.
And that was an excerpt from the third movement of the Carol Symphony by Victor Healy Hutchinson, played by the Proate Orchestra, conducted by Barry Rose. Now, in addition to your quest to become the oldest man, mm-hmm. You also like inventing words, don't you, Alex Horn?
Well, my other ambition, alongside becoming the oldest man in the world, is to get a word in the dictionary. I think this is the ultimate human achievement. I think, the ultimate legacy. If I could leave behind something to my children, it would be a word in the dictionary, even though they'd probably prefer cash. I think I'd be so proud if I could, add something to our language.
But you've invented quite a few.
Yeah, I've had a good go. I've had a good stab at it.
Give me some of your favourites.
Well, the one that's on its way, the one that's making most progress and has appeared in some collections of slang now, is the word honk, H-O-N-K, which obviously already exists, meaning the noise of a goose or the noise of a car horn.
Or in Latin America, honky-tonk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it has a rich history, but it now means cash. It's slang for cash. It kind of evokes dosh, wonga. It's that sort of a word, because money's one of the most fertile areas for slang, so I picked that one deliberately, and
And do you sort of copyright it, or...?
No, what you have to do is just make sure you've got the first instance of it in print, and so I've used it in books.
So have you written a book just to get that word in?
Not just to get that word in, but I did, in my first book, I did ensure that it got through the editor's censors, and it's appeared in The Times. Every broadsheet, actually, has published the word honk. And I've written to the dictionaries with the word, with all my collected evidence, and they've said I need more varied evidence. It can't just be from one person, but it's on its way. And even just using it now in this programme is more evidence that the word is out there, and this will spread it further into people's minds. So I appreciate this, Michael. Thank you.
And you're certainly going to grow old during the course of this programme, so that'll help too.
Yeah. This is helping my career in every way.
So just give me one or two other words that you think...
Well, there's a modern word which is meant to sound a bit like OK or Sputnik even, using the letter K, and that's the word TK Day, spelt TKDAY, and that's your 10,000th day on Earth, which I think you should celebrate. I think it's the moment in your life when you turn five figures in terms of number of days, and that's it for the rest of your life. You won't reach 100,000 days, I'm afraid, unless you live to be 274. So that's, yeah, when you're about 27 and a third, you have your TK Day, and... that's made it onto a few online dictionaries. We're getting there with that. And then some phrases as well. Mental safari. I'm trying to spread mental safari. That's when you go a bit mad. You do several rash acts. You might say, I've been on a mental safari for the past week. And it's more of a metaphor than a word, but it's, getting there.
So do you have a slightly Python-esque mind, as in Monty Python, do you think?
It's certainly the programme I watched most and found funniest when I was growing up. People always ask you for your influences. Whenever you have an interview as a comedian, people always say, who are your heroes? And I don't think my comedy's similar to them. I don't think anyone is, really. But, I still find them funny. And their absurdity and love of words, I suppose.
And the sort of surrealism, really.
Yes, yeah, and... funny walks. I mean, it's simple stuff, some of it, but funny.
I mean, the reason I ask is that there's a slight connection with the next piece, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't think you can listen to this piece without thinking of Monty Python, and without smiling, really, in my case.
Because the other thing you would think of is a military connection.
Yeah, it's marching music for marching bands by Sousa, who I love because he invented the sousaphone, Sousa. And I only found that out recently when I was researching my book about words. The book is mainly about individuals who have coined their own words, because it's actually quite rare to find a single individual behind a word, and sousaphone and saxophone are two
examples. Yes, Adolf Sax.
Yeah, I had no idea the saxophone was invented by Mr. Sax. Anyway, so Sousa wrote this piece of music for a marching band. I mean, I find marching bands quite funny anyway. It's an odd idea. You'd march whilst playing. It's impressive and ridiculous, I think. And Monty Python chose this as their theme tune for various reasons, I think. I think I've read that they chose it partly because it's completely incongruous to what they do, partly because it kind of gets to the point. It kind of introduces it like, right, we're going to start work in a minute, and also because it was free and had no copyright issues. So all valid reasons for choosing this piece of music.
And then somebody gets squashed, doesn't they, halfway through it?
Yeah, I think if you listen to it, your mind will be waiting for the noise of a splat, which unfortunately
get,
doesn't come. No, it's a shame, but you can always make it yourself.
Thank you. That was Sousa's Liberty Bell, and it was played by the regimental band of the Parachute Regiment. And the bandmaster was Warrant Officer First Class Tyler.
Quite right. They actually played it at the last, I think the last three presidential inaugurations over in America, which I find hilarious.
It's almost a kind of national anthem there in a way, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, Monty Python's very popular over there.
Your show on BBC Four, We Need Answers, has been very popular. And, of course, that has some music which I had a feeling we might encounter here.
Yeah, I suppose inspired by Monty Python, or maybe subconsciously, we were asked what we wanted as the theme music to it. And it's quite a big question, that, really. You can pick any music you want, although you were then told best if it's free again. But we chose a piece of music which is almost 300 years old, which I find incredible, really. It sounds so fresh.
I suppose with something like that, Alex Horn, it's either got to just set a certain, or it's got to work against what you're doing in a deliberate way.
Yeah, which is sort of what we've done. It's quite a serious piece of music, and it's quite lofty, whereas what we do is very silly. It sets the tone, you're right, and we do contrast with it by being...
It's a well-known piece, which helps, I suppose.
Yes, and that sits nicely on BBC Four, unlike us. So, yeah, it's easy to play off, but also it grabs the attention. It's quite exciting. It's almost like dance music. It's so thrilling, really. So, yeah, it's by Vivaldi, and it's from the Four Seasons, and it's my favourite season, winter.
We heard Victoria Mulova playing the violin with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Claudio Abbado, in Vivaldi's Concerto No. 4 in F minor, Winter, from The Four Seasons. We began, Alex Horn, by talking about birdwatching. And, in fact, you wrote a book about your father and birdwatching, didn't you?
I did. It's called Birdwatching Watching, because that's what I was doing, really. I was watching the birdwatchers who were watching the birds. And I spent a year with my dad. Well, not necessarily, actually, hardly any time with my dad. I spent a year bird watching. We had a competition to see who could see the most birds in a year. And I got hooked. I think like anything, if you do it enough, it gets under your skin, particularly bird watching. So now I can't walk down the street without hearing them. I think previously I was kind of impervious to bird song, whereas now I can't help but wonder what's making that noise, although I've barely scratched the surface of the knowledge. It's an amazing hobby, you know, to really become good at bird watching. Maybe it's the same as music. You have to spend your whole life doing it.
In fact, the last piece is called Bird Watcher.
Yeah, one of the great things, I think, about being a comedian and doing shows like at the Edinburgh Festival is that you get to pick the music that the audience has to listen to. You get to impose your own musical tastes on them. And I did a show about bird watching, and this was the song that played at the end of the show. And for me, it encapsulates bird watchers and my dad, really, because it shows them as being funny, slightly weather-beaten, self-deprecating, and normal. They're just normal people, kind of normal. And I have no idea who this bloke is. This guy, he's a Texan country singer. And this is the only song I know by him. He's called Carey Swinney. That's all I know, except that he looks pretty much identical to my dad.
I got crow dung on my shoulders. I got finch feathers in my teeth. Been up to my ass in inclement weather for just a peek at a chickadee. Don't go messing or second guessing with a bird watcher like me. I got juncos on my clothesline. Got a sparrow in a tree. I got a bluebird bathing in a bird bath. Got a high all over me. Don't go messing or second guessing with a bird watcher like me. And the balls of a male osprey. I got a grackle on my feeder. Hurry up and get the gun. I don't like grackles on my feeder. Mama, won't you get the gun? Cause you don't go messing for second guessing with a bird watcher like me. You don't go messing or second guessing.
Slightly different use of the violin to Vivaldi.
Kerry Swinney's Birdwatcher. Well, thank you very much, Alex Horn, for sharing your musical delights with us. And I look forward to seeing your performance of the Mozart Horn Concerto.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Alex Horn was talking to Michael Barclay. Well, next week on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the art critic, writer and broadcaster Andrew Graham Dixon. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Sarah Cropper. Well, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to Radio 3, if you've recently tuned in, from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through the programmes for the afternoon, the first of which is the Early Music Show in just a moment. Composers who've risked life and limb are the subject today, those travelling itinerant musicians who travel the length and breadth of Europe for work or for the sheer pleasure of travelling, taking with them musical styles and then being influenced on the way, so establishing the great approaches to music through the ages, as you'll hear in just a moment. Later today on Radio 3, a star-studded cast presents our Drama on 3.
You may have a conscience.
You took money that ought to have fed starving children.
But how much money would turn it?
You will expect your 7% as usual.
A man must live.
The Money Talk season on BBC Radio 3 continues with Ian McKellen.
If when you say you're just as bad as I am, you mean that you are just as powerless to alter the state of society, then you are unfortunately quite right.
Charles Dance, Tim Pigott-Smith.
The love of money is the root of all evil.
Yes, sir, and we'd all like to have the tree growing in our garden.
And Honeysuckle Weeks in George Bernard Shaw's first full-length play. Widowers' Houses, a brand new Drama on 3 production for our Money Talk season. Tonight at 8 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Back to this lunchtime. It's just after 1 o'clock. Time for a summary of the news from Vaughan Savage.
Labour has called on the government to say whether it's been straight with the country over the number of people expected to be made homeless by planned changes to benefits. It's emerged that David Cameron was warned by a senior civil servant in January that a planned weekly cap on benefits would create an extra 20,000 homeless families, on top of an original figure of 20,000 families likely to be affected by other benefit changes. The UN's humanitarian affairs chief, Lady Amos, has called for urgent action to tackle the malnourishment caused by the severe drought in the Horn of Africa. The region has less water than at any time since 1951, and aid agencies say 10 million people in Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia and Uganda are affected. Syrian tanks have been deployed at roads leading into the city of Hama, where tens of thousands of people staged the largest anti-government demonstration since the unrest began in March. Human rights groups say the authorities are also arresting dozens of people around the city. Exit polls in Thailand suggest that a party run by the younger sister of the exiled former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat has comfortably won the country's general election. Thailand has been plagued by political unrest since Thaksin was overthrown in a military coup 5 years ago. The chairman of the BBC Trust, Lord Paton, has signalled that there'll be further cuts in the pay of senior executives at the corporation. He said management pay was one of the most toxic reasons for the public's lack of sympathy with the BBC. A two-year-old girl in China survived a fall from a window 10 stories up when a passerby managed to catch her before she hit the pavement. Chinese state media said the girl, who'd been left unattended at a flat in the city of Hangzhou, was in a critical condition with internal injuries. The weather, it'll be a warm and sunny afternoon across the United Kingdom, although it will remain cloudy in parts of Northern Ireland and northwest Scotland. Tonight, there will be clear spells in most places with light winds. The BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
And that was Vaughan Savage. In an hour from now, we have a concert given by the BBC Concert Orchestra at the Queen Elizabeth Hall as part of the Electronica 3 Festival. You can hear music by Edward Williams, Andrew Poppy, Patrick Nunn, and, because the concert is hosted by Jarvis Cocker, music by Pulp. All at 2 o'clock in our Sunday concerts this week. But first, it's time to join Catherine Bott for the second of this weekend's travel-themed early music shows.
Es fuhrt sich Teufels von 10 Jahren an, ich wollt besehen, wie die Welt wär gestalt. Mit Elend, Armut, Wangen, Winkel, heiß und kalt, hab ich gebaut bei Christen, Griechen, Heiden. Drehten ich in dem Beutel und ein Stücklin Brot, das was von Heimwehn zählt, da ich lauf in Not. Von fremden Freunden, so hab ich manchen Tropfen rot gelassen seither, dass ich wand erscheine. Ich lauf zu Fuß mit schwerer Bus, bis das mir starb mein Vater zwar. Wohl 14 Jahre die Rosser war, von eines Raubs tal ich allzumal mit Farben fahr. Und desgleich schied ich davon mit Leide. Zwar renne, koch, so was ich doch, und malstalle. Auch an dem Ruder zog ich zu mir das, was wär. In Kania und anderswo auch wieder her. Fiel manchen Titel, was mein bestes Kleide. Gehen Preußen, Litland, Altreich, Türkei über Meer. Gehen Lombard, Frankreich, Spanien mit 2 Königes her. Treibt mich die Minn auf meines eigen Geldes wehr. Ruprecht, Siegmund, beid mit des anders Streifen. Französisch, Mörisch, Katholisch und Kastilian, Deutsch, Latein, Finnisch, Lampertisch, Reuschisch und Roman. Die 10 Sprachen hab ich gebraucht, wenn mir zerrat. Auch konnt ich vielen Trommen, Pauken, Pfeifen. Ich hab umfahren Insel und Arm, mannig Land auf Schäfen groß, der ich genoss von Sturmes Bahn, des Hoch und Nieder Meeres geliehen fast brand. Die schwarzen Seele hat mich ein Fass begreifen, da mir zerbrach mit Ungemach mein Wargetin. Ein Kaufmann was ich, doch genass ich und komm hin. Ich und ein Reus in dem Gestreus Hauptgut gewinn, das sucht dem Grund und zwar mich zu dem Reifen. Angelebt wohl 40 Jahre leicht minne 2, mit toben Würden, Lichten, Singen, Mangelein. Es wär wohl Zeit, dass ich mein eigens Kinds Geschreilichen hört in einer Wiegen Gelle. Kann ich der Vergessen nimmer ewig leid, die mir hat geben und auf dieser Märte reich. In aller Welt konnt ich nicht finden ihren gleich. Auch fürcht ich sehr ewiger Weime Bellen, in Urteilrat viel weißer hat geschätzt mich, dem ich gefallen hat mit Schalen niederlich. Ich, Wolkenstein, lebt sicher klein, vernünftiglich, dass ich der Welt allzu lang beginn zu hellen. Und wohl bekenn, ich weiß nicht, wenn ich sterben, dass mir nicht schöner wird, wann schenken soll. Hätt ich dann Gott zu sein Gebot gedienet voll, so forscht ich klein dort heiß.